Hey everybody, welcome to the Ground Effect Podcast, where we dive into the heart of Formula One, bringing you the latest news, insider analysis, and sharing our thoughts on the motorsport we love. So come and join us, G and Mick, as we look forward to what promises to be an exciting 2025 Formula One season.
Well, g'day Formula One fans, Nico Hülkenberg. After 15 long years, 239 races, he finally nails a podium. I couldn't be more happier for the bloke. Mick, we've been watching Formula One for a long time. It must be one of the most memorable podiums in recent times.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, deep down, I'm a Lewis fan and I really wanted him to get that podium at his home Grand Prix. But look, if anyone's going to deny Lewis that podium, I'm stoked for the Hulk, man. Like you said, 15 long years. And just desserts for Sauber as a group because they're killing it at the moment. But not only that, man, there was heaps of action. The rain never disappoints. What do you think of Oscar's 10-second penalty?
Mate, it was tough. Like, I have no problems with the penalty. It was tough. I think if he didn't receive it, I thought he was a shoo-in for the race. But look, you can't deny Lando. It was a great performance at home as well, getting his first home victory there. There is plenty to talk about because we have Lindblad and Aaron in FP1 made a pretty decent impression, both of them. And Precious Cellon, obviously, with Yuki Tsunoda and, of course, Franco Colapinto. I was watching the race and all of a sudden he wasn't there, so didn't get to start, which is pretty unfortunate for a driver that's under heaps of pressure.
Look, both those boys are still definitely under the pump. You get the feeling Colapinto's feeling the pressure, maybe overdriving the car a little bit. It certainly looked that way with his incident in qualifying.
And just one quick one before we deep dive into the teams, Lego trophies. I think Oscar Piastri put it to Hülkenberg, you've waited such a long time, you finally get on the podium and you get a trophy that's made out of Lego. Although, to his credit, he said that he loves Lego and his daughter will probably be quite happy playing with it.
I mean, what do you do? It's Lego and Formula One at the moment are just booming, aren't they? So,
mate, I'd be pretty happy with an official Silverstone Lego trophy, that's for sure. But anyway, let's get stuck straight into it. We've got to start off with McLaren. The big talking point, obviously, is Oscar and the 10-second penalty. Give us a little deep dive into your thoughts regarding, you think it was valid?
I have no problem with the penalty. They say that the safety car was called in quite late, which it probably was. And then Oscar supposedly went from 218 kilometers down to 56. Or 52 or whatever it was. And in those sort of conditions, it probably wasn't the best idea and sitting in the middle of the track. So I don't really have a problem with it. And, you know, Max knows how to play the game too. Max isn't silly. So that, for me, one, Oscar let slip away because I'm like you. I don't think Lando had anything for Oscar in that race. I think Oscar was cruising, managing the pace, had clear track, had the best vision. And yeah, so he definitely let that one slip away. But again, you know, McLaren, scrappy qualifying. Right. Realistically, the pace they had, they should have been a front row lockout. Wasn't to be. But their race pace, man, is just on a whole nother level at the moment. So the updates, the suspension updates that they brought seem to be favoring Lando. It's given him back that feeling at the front end that he was searching for at the start of the season. So he seems to have become more comfortable in the car. Oscar opted against it and is comfortable with what they started the season with. So yeah, championship, man, well and truly back on.
Yeah, well, he's closed the gap now, back to 8 points, 3 wins out of the last 5 for Lando. A little bit lucky, of course, but that's racing, right? He deserved the win. Unfortunate for Oscar, he definitely won't make that mistake again. I think the penalty was fair, but what I want to see is more consistency around this because we've seen pretty much the whole season drivers in P2 behind the leading car complaining all the time on the radio about brake checking or just being too erratic. We saw that with George and Max in Canada. I think the conditions made it worse, so they had to do something about it. That was really the issue. It's funny that you mentioned pretty scrappy weekend because I think most teams would probably still walk away pretty happy with a P2, P3 qualifying on a Saturday. But yeah, Piastri obviously got the upper hand, but fortunately for Lando, he won the races, and that's obviously where it completely counts. Looking at the Constructors' Championship, that's done and dusted. The actual driver standings, well, yeah, it's tight. It's getting very tight there. And I think Max has started to just drift a little bit too far away. I still can't count him out because that's the thing. It's still only 12 races done, 12 to go, plus some sprint races, of course. I think there's 4 sprint weekends to come up. So there's still plenty of points on offer, but on the face of what we saw from Red Bull, it's not looking great. So big second half of the season is definitely coming between Piastri and Norris. When do you think in the season that's going to get really juicy, where we start to see the drivers become a little bit more individual rather than team focused?
Ultimately, it depends on the point standing, but I think if they're still relatively close, come six races to go, you're going to start to see a bit of friction there. But also think letting that one go from Oscar, and we haven't seen him very emotional in front of the camera. Yeah. I got a feeling they might have just woken the beast. And I think, especially come Spa, like I said, I tend to think that the high speed circuits sort of tend to lean a little bit towards Oscar. And I think we're going to see balls to the wall, no holds barred, Oscar Piastri. I think you may have woken the beast up there, people.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting. All right, on to, look, we're promoting them. you have to, right? For me, it'll be one of those moments where I'm like an 80-year-old man, maybe if I have grandkids, and they'll be like, where were you when Nico Hülkenberg got his first podium? And I'll remember it. It's one of those podiums you'll always remember. Look, Hulk's a great driver, great personality on the grid too. Been around a long time. And he's a real likable character. So I think any F1 fan, even most Lewis Hamilton fans, like you said, Lewis was, you know, a chance for a podium, and it would have been brilliant to see his first podium in a, you know, proper race for Ferrari. Keep the streak alive, of course, at Silverstone, which, what, is it 11 years or something? Mate, that's crazy consistency. I think most people would be pretty happy to see the Hulk up on the podium.
1,000%. You can't deny the dude deserves it. And it's also the first podium for that Sauber team since 2012, where Kamui Kobayashi, I think it was, in the Japanese Grand Prix, got third. And at the moment, man, they're killing it as a team. They've moved up to six. They're not too far off Williams now. So they've definitely become probably the best of the rest at the moment. Race-wise, look, man, not much to say. Hulk killed it. Great strategy. Got him from 19th to 3rd. Unlucky for Bortoleto. I think he swapped onto the mediums, was it, in the formation lap? And then he spun, damaged his rear wing, and was unable to finish.
Yeah, one of the few cars that gambled on that formation lap. And then it just looked like they just went on the slicks
a little too early. Well, I think the how long it stayed wet for caught a lot of people out. I think they were expecting it to dry up a lot quicker.
Bortoleto did mention post-race, he was thinking, well, the sunshine's out, it's been pretty windy. He thought the conditions would dry up a little quicker than they did. But he also had that massive accident in the practice session.
Yeah.
He was airborne, spinning around. Sauber, like, they've been really punching above their weight. And we have mentioned about the upgrades that they have bought, maybe four or five races ago. You can definitely see an improvement in performance. Yes, Hülkenberg, a little bit lucky with the changing weather strategy, but he still got the job done.
Well, he made no mistakes, right?
Thing, right?
No mistakes.
Yeah.
So
one of the few drivers to not make a mistake.
Yeah.
And obviously there was a FP1 appearance for Aron, so the Alpine junior. Look, on the surface of it, yes, he did a quicker time than Bortoleto, but obviously Bortoleto had that accident in FP1. But look, Aron still did a super job, so I think he'll be pretty happy with that. And what a promotion. Sauber, well, you know, quite often when we talk about the team to team, we're bringing them in sort of down the bottom, but
they'll be slowly climbing.
Yeah, definitely. It's you know, it's looking great for Audi next year. You feel like they're building.
Yeah, like really nicely. It seems like they're starting to get the right people in the right places. You know, you've got Wheatley there, and he's definitely made a big difference.
And Binotto.
And Binotto, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah. So they're starting to get the right pieces in the right places at the right time leading into 2026. The updates seem to have worked. Since they brought those updates, man, they've just been up on the upward trends. It's really awesome to see, actually.
Yeah, and I loved Bortoleto's radio message to Hülkenberg after the race as well. It just sort of shows that there's a lot of respect and camaraderie between the two drivers as well. So that's always a good thing to have when you're in a team that is building for the future, because clearly they've got two drivers that are on the same page. Now, Red Bull, well, it was an impressive comeback drive, if you could say that, for Max Verstappen finishing P5. It was a magnificent pole on the Saturday, because that thing looked like an absolute boat on Friday through the practice sessions. A typical Max Verstappen performance on Saturday.
We had Mega Max on Saturday, and it seems to be the trend with Red Bull. Shit on Friday, absolute weapons on Saturday. And I mean, Max would have woken up on Sunday morning and looked up and gone, oh. Like, I think he knew he was in for a hard time. So a few uncharacteristic mistakes, but a lot of drivers made mistakes. So he wasn't alone in that. To pull back to P5, that was a pretty stout effort. As far as Yuki goes, man, the dude seems lost. He seems to be struggling with tire degradation. I think at the moment, I think he said that's his biggest issue. He just, for whatever reason, the tires have such high deg. Yeah, the poor dude just looks lost, man. Well, he was like half a second off Max in qualifying. And then in the race, he got that 10-second penalty with tagging with Bam and then ended up last. So pressure's still on the young fella. I was, you know, starting to feel sorry for him.
Yeah, Yuki, he's it's actually quite sad to see him in the post-race interviews because you can just see that he's so beaten up. Like, mentally, he's so beaten up. It was a Q2 exit for Yuki, of course, and yeah, like you said, the gap between him and Max is still massive. You know, it's what, 5/10, 6/10. It's always hard to judge in a wet race as well because there's just so many variables. I think if we got a dry race, it would have been a lot more easier to sort of see where he was really at for that race. But yeah, last of the runners, tied up, like you said, with Behrmann, 10-second penalty. You know, we've got, 2 to 3 weeks to the next race. Obviously, the midsummer break is coming up soon as well. Surely Red Bull is looking into a potential switch, maybe. Arvin Lindblad made his Formula One debut in FP1. Probably did relatively well. We thought he might go into this test, and perhaps Red Bull have probably said to him, balls to the wall, don't care if you've been it, give us what your pace is. Look, that was just speculation, of course, but kept his nose clean, and yeah, I mean, he did pretty well. I mean, considering he's not 18 yet, is he?
Still 17. And I mean, when you compare the gap he had, look, it's only one session. Like you said, we don't know whether it was balls to the wall. I mean, his gap wasn't much different to Yuki's.
Yeah. I mean, it is hard to compare because you just don't know what sort of, I guess, strategies are running and whatnot. But it was a very interesting choice to put Lindblad in for Yuki Tsunoda, put it that way, as we've discussed. The guy that needs the most time in the car, you turf him, and then you put your young buck in who's basically, we know he's going to be in one of those seats next year. Now, Ferrari, I thought their practice pace was looking pretty good. I mean, Hamilton led FP1. This is his first time he's led a practice session this year. And I thought he was definitely on for pole, like, come Saturday. Wasn't to be, of course. Hamilton, what did he qualify for? Yeah, P5 qualifying. Obviously, he finished the race P4. And Charles Leclerc, well, P6. And he just had a race that he termed as the worst of his career, finishing way back in P14, wasn't it?
The Ferrari pace to me seems genuine. Both drivers struggled in qualifying. Lewis said in that last Q3 one run that he had a lot of understeer in that last complex of corners, and that potentially cost him at least the front row. Charles was complaining of some hidden issue, which from what I can tell or what I've read is Ferrari seem to have a fuel pickup issue when they're on really low fuel. And I think that's what hindered Charles, because they both definitely had the pace to be on the front row. But upgrades seem to be working, and it bodes well for Spa.
You mentioned, you know, P5 for Lewis Hamilton, but it was just basically just over a tenth off pole. So it was super tight between pretty much the top six. Obviously, Leclerc, he was one of the drivers that gambled on the formation lap, tyre change. It never worked for any of those drivers. Yeah, a few excursions. Like I mentioned, he's come out and said worst weekend of his career. So, but a good one for Hamilton. I think he'll take a lot out of that. He'll be disappointed that the streak obviously came to an end. I'm pretty sure he'll be like most of us, though, that he'll be pretty pleased to see Hülkenberg on the podium. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting where they come next race.
Yeah, Lewis just ran out of tyres, man. He probably pitted a little bit too early for the softs. And then just ran out of tyres at the end trying to chase down Hulk. Think like maybe if he had the medium tyre without the mistake, he probably would have caught Hulk. And like I said, I think those upgrades have showed genuine pace. So I'm interested to see how they go in Spa.
Yeah, going back to Hamilton with the tyre at the end, he was on the soft. And when he was chasing down Hülkenberg, there was a mistake he made that they didn't actually show on TV. Well, I didn't see it on the coverage. But as I was watching the timing, and he had a bit of an excursion, I think it might have been through Maggots and Beckett's, and he lost a chunk of time there. That was after I think a few laps after he came out of the pits initially on the slicks, but I thought he may have got a chance because when Hülkenberg came in and made that pit stop, it was a bit of a slow one, like 4.4 seconds. So I thought, oh, this might play into Hamilton's hands. But yeah, you're right. I think just in the end, the strategy unfortunately wasn't quite optimal. Whereas Hülkenberg was, I don't think Sauber could have done it any much better with Hülkenberg. Mercedes, well, obviously the contract rumors is all the big thing over there with George Russell and what they're going to do. And yeah, I mean, that's just going to continue, obviously. Toto, I don't think he walks away from that weekend particularly happy. George, potentially in the mix for pole on the Saturday. He wasn't far off with a P4 qualifying. Antonelli making it into Q3, which is exactly what he needs to do with a P7. But unfortunately, come the race, Russell, one of the cars to gamble on the formation lap. And unfortunately for him, it just didn't really pan out strategy-wise. P10 finish, picks up the last solitary point. And of course, Antonelli and his just unfortunate incident with Hadjar.
Mercedes have left Silverstone scratching their head. They certainly thought that the cooler conditions would play into their hands, and it didn't seem that way this weekend. They certainly seemed off the pace all weekend. Russell, man, he maximized all he could in qualifying. I think even he was surprised to qualify where he did, which was P4. Kimi said he was struggling in the high speed pretty much the whole weekend. Poor old Hadjar, man, blind up the backside. Kimi ended up with some diffuser damage and they had to retire the car. Yeah, I mean, in the race, they just made some silly strategy calls. It's not like them. So I definitely think they'll be going away and looking at a few things.
Yeah, well, internally, he had that 3-grid place drop from the Austrian hangover with the contact that he made Max back then. So that obviously compromised his race a little bit. But yeah, you're right. A lot of gambling with strategy, particularly on Georgia's side. Now, Alpine, look, Gasly, magnificent job. Did what he had to do. Got some good solid points there. Colapinto, well, Binder in Q1, essentially qualified last. And unfortunately for him, he wasn't able to show a redemption arc, so to speak, because I think during the formation lap, I think he came in as one of the cars to gamble, to swap the tire, and then he was essentially stuck in there with a mechanical problem. Yeah, so pretty unfortunate because there's a lot of pressure on that young fellow. And I think particularly after the qualifying, he really needed to have a stonker race. And with the changing conditions, even when you are in last, just like Hülkenberg and P19, you can make some magic progress.
Yeah, especially in a race like that. For me, Alpine's still an interesting one, man, because it's like Gasly seems to be able to get some one-lap pace out of nowhere. Before this race, he's had 7 Q3 appearances, but the only problem is come the race, he's only managed to convert 3 of those into points. So it was a solid drive for him again, Q3 appearance, and then managed to capitalize and get a good haul of points. That car's still struggling. It's kind of hard to get a gauge of where they really are because you've got, you know, similar to Red Bull, you've got one driver that's carrying the team. Poor old Colapinto, man. I think he's starting to get a little bit desperate. I think he could see that in qualifying. He's obviously seen what Gasly's doing and he's just trying to close that gap and probably pushing a little bit too hard. Yeah, and in the race, came into the pits, basically stalled it and couldn't restart the car. Therefore, he couldn't start the race, which is a shame.
What do you think moving forward with Colapinto? Obviously, the Bottas rumors have been starting to fly. But even I just heard another rumor about Jack Doohan being promoted back into the seat.
Well, look, I hope Jack might get the promotion. That'd be good to see. Hopefully he gets that second chance. But yeah, like, I mean, Bottas, that's not a terrible idea. You know what I mean? I mean, he's going to do a better job than Colapinto at the
moment. Brings a lot of experience, of course. And I think he, from a developmental point of view, I think he'd be the perfect guy to have in that seat.
Yeah.
To essentially just come and bring his experience and just be like, this isn't working. I don't like this. We need to improve this. I mean, why not for the last 12 races? But if you've seen our other video, well, maybe that seat is undusted for Kimi for next year. So yeah,
never
before
know.
Everyone rages on what we just said. Carlos Sainz, his bad luck just sort of continues. But for Albon, finally after 3 DNFs in a row, he's back in the mix of points. Now, both Q2 exits from a qualifying perspective, so I think Williams would be pretty disappointed with that. Carlos Sainz just missing out with a P11 qualifying, and of course, Albon, a little bit lower, P14. A great finish for Albon, P8, and Sainz in 12. What did you make of that one?
Yeah, look, I think we're starting to see the effects possibly of not bringing the amount of upgrades that other teams are bringing. Apparently, they do have some upgrades coming, possibly in Spa, but they've only scored 4 points in the last four races. They need to be careful because, what are they, fifth in the constructors? And then you go down to eighth and it's super, super tight. Like, they're at risk of falling behind. Like we said, Sauber now moved up to behind them in sixth. Yeah, Albon, you know, he did a pretty decent job to finish 10th. Sainz, well, he had that, I think he had a bit of a collision at turn 15 with Charles Leclerc, and then ended up with a bit of wing damage and floor damage as well. So he basically finished the race with a bit of damage, and there was not much he could sort of do there. They need to be careful because, like I said, 6th, 7th and 8th are starting to nip at their heels, and at the moment they're not quite the best of the rest.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of money in that Constructors' Championship. So just, you know, finishing one place lower can be, we're talking millions of dollars. Yeah, regarding the upgrades, it has been said that James Vowles has come out and said that most of our focus now is geared towards 2026. But you're right, they can't take their eye off the ball because there's a lot of money in that Constructors' Championship.
Well, they're basically one of the only teams that hasn't brought, if like, any.
Anything substantial, right?
Yeah, at all. So, you know, what they did at the start of the season was amazing because they were able to maximize what they had. And then, you know, you start to see teams like Sauber and Haas bring these upgrades, even Aston bringing these upgrades, and they're making a step forward. If you're not bringing anything or matching what they're doing, you are generally going to fall behind. Like I said, they've only managed to score 4 points in the last four races. They need to be careful.
Quite a few mechanical failures, though. With it was Albon that had the engine issues,
yeah.
I think, two races in a row. Aston Martin, both cars in the points. And, well, Stroll is ahead in the championship of Alonso again after, you know, extending the lead at the start of the season and then basically falling off to nowhere. And Alonso having, I think, three or four races in a row now in the points. I thought that was it. Alonso is going to take control of that little inter-team battle and the jokes will be over that Stroll is the better driver. Well, he has come away with a P7 and Alonso in P9, I think it was. So I think Aston Martin be pretty happy with that, particularly Stroll, because he was a Q3 knockout, wasn't he? Obviously, they've maximized the strategy. He's had a good race. I think he went onto the softs quite early in one part of the race, and that really did help him. I know Alonso was a little bit disappointed post-race. No driver likes to go backwards from your qualifying position. And I think for Alonso, that was a bit of a disappointment. Aston Martin, they'll be happy, particularly Stroll back in the mix.
Yeah, I think, you know, Stroll seems to be able to do it in the wet, man. He seems to be a bit of a rain master of sorts. His strategy, that good old saying, right tire at the right time. I think he came in lap 3 or 4 and put on those softs. Yeah, and I mean, Alonso's frustrated. It probably doesn't help that he's seen Stroll come from P17 and end up where he did. So they nailed the strategy. Aston Martin. I'm not quite sure on the upgrades. Probably next week or in Spa, we might get a bit more of a true read of how their upgrades are going. I think they brought a new floor in Silverstone, like a lot of other teams brought a lot of major upgrades to Silverstone. Can't say too much wrong with Stroll, man. Solid race. Fell away a little bit at the end there. Yeah. And I mean, Alonso was on the same strategy as the front runners. Frustration was probably more from watching his teammate come from P17 to end up ahead of him.
Now, Haas, well, Behrmann, big mistake under red flag conditions with the pit entry in the practice session because he qualified brilliantly, made a Q3 appearance. So he showed plenty of pace, but a bit of a rookie error, that one, coming into the pit lane and making a big hash of it. And unfortunately for him, 10 grid spot penalty. Ocon, he just got involved in that tie-up with Liam Lawson at the start of the race. He was lucky not to get any damage, to be honest. But unfortunately, both Haas cars, no points this week.
Behrmann's incident was pretty stupid, to be fair. And look, he's earned himself some penalty points now. So I think he's only 3 or 4 points away from a race ban now. And it's a shame because he looked quick all weekend. Like, without that 10 grid penalty, who knows where he could have finished. As far as Ocon, you know, a scrappy race, got squeezed between Yuki and Lawson, led to making contact with Lawson. And then ended up making contact with his own teammate, which is a big no-no, trying to make a pass on the inside there. So again, another team whose upgrades seem to have worked. Now for Haas, it's really about being consistent, not being quick one weekend, shit in the next. So hopefully these upgrades that they've brought bring some consistency. We go to Spa, it's not similar, but it does have the high speed quite flowing. So it'll be interesting to see their pace because if they can bring that sort of pace to Spa, they're in for a cracking race there.
I mean, Behrmann showed great pace. I mean, was a great qualifying session. Just unfortunate. He's just had a lot of run-ins with the red flags, but can't even say it's like a rookie error. It was pretty bad. I think he'd be pretty embarrassed by it all, to be honest. Now, speaking of a team that really had a shocker, and they were looking good through the practice sessions, and that is the Racing Bulls. And like we did mention, the contact of Ocon with Lawson, purely a racing incident. Ocon really had nowhere to go in the middle of, I mean, three cars into that corner was never going to work. And unfortunately for Lawson, he was the guy that ended up out of the race through no fault of his own. But pretty unfortunate. Lawson, though, didn't really get a handle on the Saturday, which has been quite the problem for him, qualifying P16, so Q3 knockout, particularly because he was looking so good through most of the practice sessions, and Hadjar and Lawson were very similar in pace. Hadjar, Q2 elimination, and obviously the DNF for him as well. Maybe should have given himself a little bit more margin in those conditions, but you see that in wet weather racing. Basically, when you look at that onboard footage, it's just grey.
Right, he was,
and then he was right on the tail, red light. It's like, no, mate.
Right, he was Stevie Wonder, man. He couldn't see anything. There was nothing he could have done, poor fella.
Nothing, yeah.
And then, you know, when he went off, he actually hit the concrete barriers there. So it was a pretty scary one. Even Lawson's shunt, man, was a bit of a, it had a pretty decent thud about it. Again, Lawson super unlucky because the gap between him and first was only like 6 tenths in that qualifying session. You don't qualify well, you put yourself at risk of having those 3-into-1 kind of incidents. And it's a shame because I think they might have had good pace in those changing conditions too. So it's a real shame for them. And again, with that midfield battle, man, so tight, you can't afford to. They're just lucky that Haas, you know, had a bit of an off weekend as well.
Hadjar, he was one of those drivers at the start that pitted under the formation lap, and that basically kind of screwed him from the get-go. But even back there in those type of conditions, you give yourself a chance of capitalizing on the strategy moving forward with the changing conditions. So yeah, he'll be pretty annoyed by that.
In those kind of conditions, they definitely had, and those two drivers, man, they definitely had the tools to actually do something really well this weekend. So it was a shame.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps up most of the deep dive. If you look at the Constructors' Championship now, it's a P1 clearly for McLaren. The battle is obviously for P2 and some of those other midfield positions, and naturally no one wants to come away with a wooden spoon. Yep. So we're halfway through the season. Can expect a few more changes, of course. The Drivers' Championship, realistically from this point forward, is down to Oscar and Lando. Max, a very slim outside chance, but you just can't write the guy off.
12 to go. Quite interesting. Yeah. We started with a wet race. We get halfway through the season with a wet race. But like you said, man, the F1 circus, man, it just keeps churning out, and it makes the year go so fast with all the little subplots. And I mean, this year there's certainly a lot more to play out, and bring on the next 12 races, man. This is going to be good.
So yeah, halftime report, we might come out with some content regarding where we think the teams are traveling or how well they've traveled over the last 12 races and where we think they may go into the next 12 races. Do you see any big changes in the next half of the season?
Yes. But I'll keep them to myself for now.
Nice.
So we could create some more content for you guys. Yeah, looking forward to the second half of the season, man. It's gonna be epic, especially up the front. So until then, we'll catch you in the next one.
Catch up.